The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
This episode of Beyond is brought to you by Gamefly. Gamefly is a way to buy and rent all your favorite games while saving money. Go to Gamefly.com, pick your favorite games, and have them mailed directly to your door. Go to Gamefly.com/Beyond to start your free premium 30-day trial today. Play some games!
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Hey, what's it say on your shirt there?
Oh, it says Beyond.
Oh!
Beyond!
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 Welcome to Beyond, episode 486. My name is Max Scoville, and I'm joined by my good friends Andrew Goldfarb.
Hello.
Zach Ryan.
Present.
And Marty Sliva.
Greetings.
We have a very exciting show. I would say that this episode of this show is probably the culmination of our entire friendship.
Ah.
Because you just reviewed Persona 5.
Yeah.
But also Destiny 2 got announced, so let's talk about Destiny 2.
Our two favorites.
The moment we've all been waiting for.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's a thing coming out that is called Final Fantasy 15 : Chapter 13 : Verse 2, because they always just want to wow us with the naming conventions over there at Square Enix.
At least there's no .8 at the end of it.
That's true.
And no fractions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Persona 5, this is like just
whoa,
what's
time
up?
Out.
What's
wait a
up?
Minute, wait a minute. You
what's
skipped up? The first note here.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. Did you guys know that the Dutch call baseball a honkball?
Okay. You don't get invited to the Google Docs anymore.
Did all you right? know that?
You can look at the paper when it's printed out.
They call it honkball.
Did you write honkball?
Yeah, that's what they really call it. Anyway, about Persona 5.
Yes.
About this honkball game that we've been waiting for 8 years.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm trying to think, like, when was Persona 5 announced, first of all?
So it was formally actually announced in 2013, but it was, they talked about it so long before that. I actually put up a timeline
today.
Yeah, it was
2009 or
something? There was never a Persona PS3.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So basically, Persona 4 was kind of the end cap of PS2. It was one of the latest games that came out on PS2 in 2008. And pretty much right around then, even in 2007, people were already kind of starting some rumors. And I put up a timeline. It's called Everything You Need to Know About Persona 5. That's kind of starting with the rumors leading all the way up. So the announcement came in 2013, but as far back as like 2008, 2009, there was already kind of rumblings. And then in 2010, they talked about the team transitioning over. In 2011, they confirmed the director and character designer and composer would return. It was kind of like a slow burn.
Yeah, I mean, the core team went to work on Catherine, though, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in the meantime, we've also gotten, there was like Dancing All Night, and there was the fight, there's the fighting game.
Yeah.
The Golden
there's also been, there's also been a bunch of like offshoots, too. Like there was the Persona Q.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Mystery Dungeons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool having that core team because, yeah, you mentioned Catherine like that, and now they're doing Project ReFantasy. Like that kind of brain trust of Hoshino, the director, and Soejima, the character designer, and Meguro, the composer. Like those three dudes, like spearheading projects, like those are, that's Persona 3, Persona 4, Catherine, Persona 5. Like it's that like marked step up in quality.
So, I mean, just right off the bat, is Persona 5 up to the standard of those other games?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So we're recording this before the embargo's up, but I guess when you're listening to this, it's up. Yeah, I gave it a 9.7. Like, this is, to me, it is not only the best Persona game, but I think it is the new gold standard for a Japanese RPG. I think it is the best turn-based RPG probably in a decade, if not longer.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's very exciting.
I mean, in terms of, like, traditional, I'm about 11 hours in, and I feel like in terms of a traditional JRPG, like, turn-based battle system alone, just the things that you can do, the pacing of the battles, it's completely, it's weird because it's at the same time it's so much a JRPG in that traditional sense, mm-hmm. but it's so different and so forward thinking and so smart. Like, to me, playing it feels very similar to the way that I felt the first time I played Final Fantasy XII. Like, oh, this is how Japanese RPGs are made mm-hmm. going
yeah.
forward.
Yeah, like,
yeah,
yeah. I'm probably close to 5 hours in. I started it and I felt really sort of guilty because I was like, I don't know if this is happening. And obviously, that's just tip of the iceberg. Sure. It's also jumping into a turn-based RPG that has heavy tutorials after playing Zelda for weeks.
Yeah.
It's just the amount of hand-holding that goes into it, just by the nature of it being a tutorial.
No, totally.
But I finally kind of gotten past that point, and I think it just clicked, and I'm really excited to see where it goes. But in terms of it being like the logical progression of the turn-based JRPG, it's totally like, oh, wow, yeah, this is that. I think I played Final Fantasy 15 and I was like, man, this reminds me, this is like if you went back in time and you showed this to your former self, there'd still be that kind of like, yeah, but why isn't it turn-based?
Right.
Yeah, it's like funny because like you mentioned Zelda, which obviously broke a lot of the conventions of Zelda, and I feel like Final Fantasy broke a lot of the conventions of Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
And I think you're seeing this kind of departure from traditional turn-based RPGs, which is fine. And like there's been some really great kind of action RPGs that were born from that. Mm-hmm. But it does feel really good to go back to kind of a perfected, like this is what like years and years of growth look like in returning to that kind of traditional like turn-based format.
Yeah, it's also just it's stunning how just the resolution of it, like it's yeah. it looks like it's playing an anime.
Yeah,
you know, yeah,
it's
yeah.
not
totally.
It's yeah. not playing a video game that's made with polygons and shapes and all that just happens to look like an anime. It feels
no,
like
it just, yeah.
it's a friggin'
anime. It's one of the most stylish games I've ever seen, which in every way, shape, and form, in yeah. music, in animation, in transitions, in menus.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah.
But it's insane that the game also has the substance to back it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also really, really mature right off the bat.
Yeah. yeah.
Like I was not expecting as many cuss words. I was not expecting some of the
It does
the,
do a lot of swears.
The themes that I'm already dealing with this early in the game. And I'm just like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's one thing that I think it does better than its predecessor. And Persona 4 is one of my favorite games of all time. Like I always tell people mm-hmm. that I always have two games that I'm sort of somewhere in that I go back to when I'm like, oh, what should I play? And it's Persona 4.
Twisted Metal Black.
Twisted Metal Black.
It's Candy Crush Soft.
Persona 4 and Wind Waker. But yeah, I think that what this game does better is it gets right into the thick of things from the outset. Whereas like Persona 4 had this sort of like slow burn leading up to like even the first time that you go into like an actual dungeon, as it were, you know, like this just throws you right into it and you get right. And I think one of the things that I really love about the battle system in particular is that it makes me realize that I was missing things from previous Persona games that I didn't even know that I really wanted to have. Like the ability to highlight enemies and figure out their weaknesses going into a battle initially. Like it's so smart. Like the way that you can just jump into a battle, hit one button, be like, right, these guys are weak against ice because I've already used that on another enemy type earlier. And like, it's brilliant.
Yeah. They added this thing called Baton Pass, I think is really cool.
Yeah.
Too,
it's awesome.
Where like on top of just being like the typical kind of, okay, like I have fired their ice, like they're weak to that, blah, blah, blah. You can now also like, so if you exploit a weakness, you get an extra action basically, and you can now give that turn to a party member.
Huh.
So basically you can chain essentially where if you're really smart about selecting your party members and about like kind of the abilities you have, you can kind of think things through and chain together 4 or 5 of these and really just never even give the enemy a chance to attack, but they can do it back to you.
Yeah.
So it's like really crazy because it makes it completely can change the, like you can be all the way up until the end of a battle, like they haven't even touched you yet, you're feeling great, and then they chain together a thing that just destroys you, and wow. It's like it really changes the tide quickly, and I love that.
And what's insane about it is like I feel when you hear the term turn-based RPG, you automatically think slow, you know, like you automatically think like sort of methodical.
Yeah.
And this game, at the point that I'm at, like 10, 11 hours in, the battle system is so fast, and once you get it down and like you know what you're doing with it, it almost feels like you're playing a fighting game because you're throwing out these button combinations, switching characters, switching spells, flipping out your personas on the fly to bring in different spells that the enemies are weak against, and then chaining the one mores, and then you got these all-out attacks. And it's just like every so often while I'm playing it, I have to take a step back and be like, okay, what's going on here? What am I doing? This is nuts.
Conversely, it's also got rush mode. So
yeah,
as
yeah.
opposed to dealing with just kind of like throwaway enemies and that typical, like when I think.
What's rush mode? Sorry.
Rush mode is it basically just, it is like fast forward.
Oh, all like, physical. Oh, like Bravely Default?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah.
But what I love about that is like when I think turn-based JRPG, like I grew up playing them here and there, and it always, I always got frustrated by the kind of just the tedium of it.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people love that kind of grinding nature. And, you know, that's how a lot of people listen to podcasts. But it's just... It always kind of was like, I don't know if I want to do this. You know, yeah. I want to fight another Pidgey, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, it does the Earthbound thing too, where if you are leveled up significantly enough, you'll just insta-kill an enemy when you encounter them, at least in Mementos. And then you'll also, they'll run away from you. Like you just don't have to worry about random encounters at that point.
But it seems like it already just has like a pretty good amount of respect for the player's time.
Yeah.
The fast forwarding options is through cutscenes and stuff. Like I didn't save right. And so I brought my save file to work and I was like, I gotta go through all this crap again. And it was just pretty painless. So that was really nice. Let's back up for a second. This is my first time playing a Persona game. My fiance's played Golden excessively, and I heard a lot of bits about that, and I don't fully understand what it is. I'm good friends with you. You talk about it all the time, and sometimes it's like that. It's very odd. It's like having a small child who's discovered a new...
Who comes home from school and keeps telling you about this friend. You're like, I don't know who Dale is.
Yeah, it's like that Louis C.K. bit where he's like, oh, you're going to talk about Pokemon? All right, well, you're going to go in the bathroom. I'm going to show you all the different lotions and explain what the different things that they do because you don't care about that. But no, like I'm kind of jumping into it being like, what are the pieces here? It's gorgeous. And my immediate sort of takeaway is it's like Harry Potter, Pokemon, The Matrix.
I mean, kind of, actually, I see all of that. Yeah. I mean, like, the thing is, like, we keep talking about all the battle stuff. Like, there's such a deep, like, intricate dungeon crawling turn-based JRPG. But then the whole other half of the game is just exploring Tokyo. And you have, you form these relationships with people, either dating or just finding kind of NPCs that you become friends with. And there's, like, this really deep, like, social system. And you level up your personal attributes, like your kindness and your guts and your
knowledge.
What is it? Your guts, your knowledge, your charm. Yeah, there's like five stats that you have. And basically, like, it's sort of two games in one. And so it becomes this, like, the whole game takes place over the course of a year. And every day you have... You're a high school student by day and you're kind of saving the world by night. But what that means is you go to class and then you have time after school and you have time in the evening. And you have these chunks of free time where you kind of have to manage your time very carefully. And like even that in and of itself is a really captivating, fun game, even if you were to ignore dungeons and all the other stuff that's going on.
Ah, so it's a video game about managing a work-life balance. That's a great thing for me to have as someone who should be playing video games.
It's so funny because like any time that anybody's describing the other half of a Persona game to somebody, like, yeah, you can go to school, you can get a part-time job, you can go and play on the basketball
team. Don't get on it because that's bad.
it's like that sounds stupid and like something I would never be interested in, but it does it in such a way that it is extremely compelling, and the way that the two halves of the game tie into each other is so smart and so fun that it you immediately get a sense of like a rewarding sense by doing things like going home and reading a book or going and joining the basketball team or
life? You joining a basketball team?
I don't even know anymore.
I mean, Andrew, you described in your review as a time management simulator, which I think is super interesting, which is something like Stardew Valley.
That note, you platinum the game in two languages?
So we must set.
So how's that time management working out for you?
Yeah.
Not great.
Yeah. I played this because it came out in September in Japan, so it's been out by the time it's out next week, it will have been 7 months almost 7 months since it came out in Japan.
And you only platinumed it twice?
Yeah, right?
How many hours have you sunk into this time management simulator?
I'm at 5.5 playthroughs total.
What?
So it's like, I think I'm at like 220, 230 hours in total.
Oh my God.
That's over the course of 7 months.
Oh, so then like, that's fine.
It's been a little chunky. Like, I also have a bunch of time into Zelda.
Okay.
I've also put 30.
I also do heroin, guys. It's fine.
Good Lord.
Sleep very little.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, I guess, high praise. I'm glad that this game you've been waiting for years isn't a massive letdown.
Yeah. And I mean, so it's funny because for the review, I wanted to go back and mess with P4 a little bit just to kind of remind myself what it was like. And it is now very hard to go back.
Oh, no. Yeah. Is it really?
Yeah.
I hadn't even considered that.
Because, like, it is just everything here. It's kind of like if you ever played Persona 3 on PS2, like the full version of it, especially FES, where there's cutscenes and you're walking around, and then you try and go to Persona 3 Portable. It's the same game, but it's very condensed, and like there's no like free roaming. Everything is like essentially moving a dot around and fast traveling. This almost feels as dramatic as that, where it's like really hard to go back and have these kind of very like, it almost feels like having blinders on, like when you're in dungeons in that game, especially there. you're just working your way up and you're trying to get to the next floor, and everything's procedurally generated, and they might have kind of a different theme. Like in P4, there's a bathhouse as opposed to a castle, right, and stuff like that. But in this game, like, it's not like that. Like, every dungeon is hand built. And so it feels like there's all these custom puzzles and totally different, completely different puzzle types that feel like I said in the review, like they feel like different games, because they really, really do. Huh. And it is hard to explain, like, how much bigger and just more, like I hate the stupid phrase next generation, but it does. It really does. You feel that generational leap where everything's just bigger and better.
Two generations.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing. Like, when I got my fiance Jana the gold when it came out, and she burned through it. She loved it. And then I was like, there's three. You can check that out. It's a PSP game. And she's like, oh, this is unplayable right now. I cannot go back this far. And it was just like, yeah.
So, I mean, both of those games obviously had sort of updates with Fez, with the mobile version, and with Golden. Do you think this is, this game's done, right?
Yeah. I mean, maybe there's DLC, right? Like, yeah. I can see them doing something like adding, adding stuff later. Like those games added, like in Golden, for example, the character Marie, who's the best girl, is added only in Golden.
She
and
is
so
the best girl.
That's like a whole extra social link and everything separately. I could see them maybe doing something like that. Like, there's no, each social link has like a arcana attached to it. God, this is getting dirty. And the Aeon one is kind of the bonus one that you get in, like, Flux. Fez and in like Aeon Flux in the game. It's crazy.
If I had a stroke just then, I didn't notice.
Yeah, I can see them adding like a new confidant, like a new path to pursue or something like that later, maybe.
Yeah.
Move on.
Like, that's still like the guts, the mechanics of a game. It is really hard to go back a generation or two. Going from, like,
I mean, that's sort of the big conversation around Zelda right now as well, right? Yeah. It's like, so many people are playing Breath of the Wild and saying, how do I go back to Zelda before this? And it's like,
and what's next? Is this just the engine of, is every Zelda game this now? Or like, what if they made it?
Is every Persona game Persona 5 henceforth?
Yeah.
I think
it'd probably be Persona 6, right? It'd be confusing if they just made it
Persona 5 the Platinum.
Persona 5 2.
I am excited. I'm excited that we got this good of a Persona game, because it really might be the last one for a while. I mean, yeah. I would love to see them do DLC.
Considering the development cycle on this game, if that's the case, then we're looking at not having Persona 6
until a late PS5.
Not even to mention the fact that the three guys I mentioned, the director, character designer, and composer, are now on a game called Project ReFantasy, which is a brand new studio called Studio Zero within Atlas, making a fantasy RPG more Final Fantasy style. That's probably going to take 6 years.
Can you join the basketball team in that too, though?
We'll see. I hope so.
Or maybe it'll be Honkball, the Dutch baseball.
God, I would kill to play some Honkball in the Persona game.
The one activity.
Actually, you probably play a fair amount of Honkball in Persona if you catch my drift. I'm winking.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Let me tell you for just a moment about Gamefly. It is the leading video game rental service. They have over 9,000 titles to choose from, probably more by now. It lets you try your favorite games and movies before you buy. You can keep the games as long as you want, and you never have to worry about late fees. I mean, with movies, it's kind of just renting, but with games, if it's like a $60 investment for a massive, massive time sink, might make sense to try it on. Plus, you can cancel any time. They also now have movie rentals, too. The premium trial allows you to check out two games and or movies at a time. And you can only get this offer by visiting Gamefly.com/beyond. Now go sign up and start playing some new games you never played or revisiting some old favorites absolutely free for 30 days. Beyond!
So we do a thing on the show. We do rapid fire. That's when I go in the Facebook group. It's facebook.com/group/podcastbeyond or clouds.net/groups.wmv/_. I figure this time we do
/ and an underscore.
Brian's not here and you are here. So we're going to do rapid fire Persona Edition rush mode. Joe Burns asked, is there more exploration available in P5 compared to the options available with the world map of P3 or P4G? That was a sentence. We kind of talked about that a second ago. And do social links have the same effects over the battle system as in Persona 4 Golden, or has it evolved in a further way?
Have you played enough to be able to answer this question?
I think I'm going to have to stick another 250 hours in there. Yeah.
So for the first part, there's definitely more exploration in that there's just more. It's kind of still that, like, it's not like a true open world or anything. It's kind of that, like, faux-open world, almost like hubs. So you have a lot like how you would go like in Persona 4, you're kind of going from sort of the main stretch in town to the school hallways to like the waterfront. And there are these very small controlled areas. it's still sort of like that. Like, you go to Shibuya, Shinjuku, Akihabara, kind of the hubs within Tokyo, and they're just much bigger and there's more.
It does a good job of capturing, like, the feel of those.
Holy cow. Right? Yeah. That's districts. One thing that I did want to touch on is, like, their rendition of Tokyo, the version of Tokyo in this game, makes me want to go back to Tokyo so badly because it's so realistic. Like, the first hour that I was playing that game, one of the first things it tasks you to do is to get on the subway and go to school. And walking into the subway station for the first time, my jaw, literally, I had my mouth open because it's like I was reading the signs to follow the trains to go to school, and it's just, it felt like the first time I was in a Tokyo
line.
It's so perfect, like such a perfectly realized version of Tokyo.
And you unlock, like, this subway map is how you navigate, and it's like it gets so big and crazy, like
is it the actual subway map?
That'd
be an awesome thing for weeaboos to train themselves to
jump in that Yamanote line.
It's definitely more like stylized than that, but it is really cool seeing, like, going to Harajuku and going to, like, all these different districts that I'm just like, oh, this, like, feels authentic. Like, it's so crazy. So I do think Aspiration is definitely bigger. It's but it's not. I also don't want to build it up as though it's like GTA. Like,
you can do it one of two ways, right? Like, you can go from the school to the train station, get on a train and go to another district and explore that district and jump a train and go there. Or you can open a menu and just travel somewhere else. And it just sort of depends on how much time you want to sink.
I also just noticed that you're wearing a Midnight Channel shirt.
Did that on purpose.
We thought we were going to wear the same shirt.
I've been waiting for Andrew and I to both wear this shirt on the same day for literally a year.
We will.
Yeah.
And then real quick, I do want to address the social links have the same effect in the battle system. It is so much more robust. It is so cool. The way social links affect gameplay, they're called confidants now. They have a much, much, much more dramatic effect. And you kind of have to be really careful with who you decide to level up, because it'll get you much more, like, advantages in battle. So, like, there's somebody who you level up and that gives you the ability to switch party members during battle.
Pro tip,
and
who should people level up? One pro tip.
As soon as it becomes available, I would recommend going to Kanda, which is, like, the far right of your map. There's a church. And leveling up a girl named Hifumi Togo, who's the one I was just talking about. She'll help you switch party members in battle, which is huge. That's such a big advantage. There's other characters that give you, like, depending on who they are, and this isn't spoilers at all, but, like, depending on what the nature of that NPC is and kind of what their job is or what they're good at or what they're doing, you'll get corresponding abilities. So just an example is that in palaces, which are the dungeons in this game, you have an alert level that's rising that you have to be kind of careful to keep down, because otherwise you'll just get kicked out of the dungeon and have to come back the next day. There's a character who keeps your alert level really low and eventually just bottoms it out, so you don't even have to worry about it.
Awesome.
There are so many like distinct advantages to leveling up certain social links, and it's really cool and really smart.
Mm-hmm. Kendall Arias, who sounds like a Persona. What's the few things that Andrew don't like about Persona 5? He was interrupted last time. That was never brought up, and it never got answered.
Sorry.
Well, what are the 0.3 things that are bad about it? not how reviews work.
Hey, Zach, you want to talk about your shirt some more, or just I was thinking we could probably talk about it. It's a pretty good
shirt. The Midnight Channel is from Persona 4 audio, Golden.
Sorry, go ahead.
I think there are a couple, like, so I mentioned this thing called Mementos, which is the, when you're not in the palaces, which are the hand-built custom dungeons, kind of per boss, there's this thing called Mementos, which is just all for side quests and side missions, and it's all just grinding, basically. It's they are procedurally generated. You're kind of going down. Persona 3's dungeon was called Tartarus, and you're working your way up and up and up. This is the opposite. You're working your way down, down, down in this thing called Mementos. In there, you get side quests, and you have to go to a certain floor and find a dude and fight him or whatever. Those are generally, like, the stories there aren't anything special. There are a couple that I thought were, like, either really funny or, like there were a few that I actually did find, like, legitimately interesting and moving, but for the most part, those are really not that great. And then
it's just kind of padding.
I find there are, like, minor complaints I have. I find it crazy that you still can't do same-sex dating in this game. There's, like, a pretty legitimate amount of sexual tension between some of the male NPCs and your protagonist, to the point where, like, there are even dialogue options. Like, there's a point where, like, a character says he's hot, and, like, one of the options is, like, oh, we'll turn the air conditioner. And one of them is, like, why don't you take off your clothes? But, like, it's, like, laughed away.
Okay.
And you can't, like, when you get a social link to 10 or to 9, you are given the option to be romantic or platonic with the women, but you just don't have that with the men. I thought that was, like, just feels outdated to me. Like, yeah, it feels like something that would be pretty easy for them to include.
Can you take your clothes off, though, because it's hot, or?
You cannot, although you do get different outfits as the, okay, as the season.
They're very Breath of the Wild. Also, it seems like the voice acting is a little a step back from, I mean, Golden's is at such a high caliber.
Yeah, it's funny because like the watching trailers, I was actually really, really nervous about the dub like ahead of time. And throughout it actually...
Ryuji Sakamoto.
Yeah, like some of the pronunciations are weird. There are some little weird bits. I know you said you aren't super into the localization. I liked it a lot. But.
To me, it just, and this is not necessarily just a problem with Persona 5. It just, like, I feel like the translation, and I know that I'm going to get blasted for saying this, but like the localization in this game just feels very anime to me. It's just like so over the top. And like sometimes people just say things that it's like out of context, just don't make, it just doesn't make sense why somebody would say that in terms of like what's happening in that scene, you know? And yeah, so like there's little things that bother me, but mostly I think having played more of it, and I was talking to you about this, but I think having played more of it, I'm sort of on the same page with you where it's, I feel like the voice acting is good, but there wasn't like, somebody wasn't there like saying, hey, that's a weird inflection you put on that. Like maybe try that again in a different way or something like that.
Yeah, there are a couple of those weird moments where I was like, huh, that's a weird way to say that. Or just like, I do agree there's like occasional dialogue things where I'm like, oh, that was a weird choice. But for the most part, I don't know, I warmed up to the characters. I think even the ones that struck me as like uninteresting at first, like by the time I beat it, I was like, oh, like you're great. Like I really did warm up.
I think it's called Stockholm Syndrome.
I think I texted you like the second day that I was playing it, and I was like, I hate Ryuji so much. He's so annoying. But now after the first dungeon, this is my boy. Like he's totally a cool dude.
Yeah,
Persona hang out about with you. Him in real life. Yeah, probably so.
Exactly like when we met. There's a weird like archetype system to Persona characters. I think Ryuji does feel like sort of an evolution of like Junpei and Yosuke. From Persona 3 and 4, like you can kind of,
he's so much more over the top
lines
than someone like Yosuke. You know?
Yeah.
Like, he's always so angry and like so like calling everybody a bastard and like, you know, it's like, take it easy, dude.
I think that's what it is. Everyone is, just like everything else in the game, the characters themselves even are just bigger and more exaggerated. And yeah, I think that means that when you really like them, you really like them and it feels bigger. Whereas like when things about them bother you, they're always there and they're bigger and they're kind of drawing more attention to themselves.
If they put them on the full television now.
Yeah, yeah.
Got
yeah,
the small
this
screen
is the first one available in 1080p.
Let's see. Anthony Abade, a.k.a. Abade that just won't quit. I've never played a Persona game, but I'm really curious about this one. Would Andrew recommend it for someone who likes JRPGs but isn't familiar with the series?
Yes. There's no, I mean, there are Easter eggs, but there's no like story elements or returning characters or anything you need to know. Like, you're fine. You could jump right in. Don't need to play the series at all. And
so you're saying it's a Persona for Persona veterans and newcomers alike.
I had a line comparing it to that opening message from 15 yeah, in my review that Dan edited out. But
yeah, it sounds like something Dan would cut.
Yeah, I do think that they're taking that same approach. It's meant to be like, people returning to it will recognize kind of everything being dialed up. And it brings back so many cool things that haven't been in Persona since like Persona 2, like arranged weapons, and it brings back demon negotiation and all that stuff. But yeah, like you can jump into it and be totally fine.
Cool. Stephen Cox asked, does Persona 5 have a timer calendar system? You mentioned this. It's mm-hmm, just a year.
It's a little less than a year. Yeah, it's I mean, I won't get into where it ends. But yeah, it's like every Persona game. It's taking place roughly over the course of a year. You've arrived in a new town, new school, and you're meeting okay, everybody. Yeah. Same idea.
He said, like, example, if I don't solve a case in 2 weeks, is it game over? And I was like, crap, if yes, I got 2 weeks to do a thing, I'm like a week and a half in here. I'm like, I got really worried.
It'll always tell you in the top right okay, if you're yeah, in. So
it'll say like 9 days till X happens. Yeah. And then, you know, OK, I still have 9 cycles before I need to do this.
You always have one less day than it says because you have to do a thing when you get to the end of a dungeon right, that takes an extra yes, day. So if it says 10 days, do it within 9. But yeah, you'll always know. It keeps you very aware. Okay. Yeah, there is like that time management thing we were talking about. There is kind of that sense of you only have a certain number of days, so use your time wisely.
Okay. Benjamin Connell says, speaking of time wisely, how many hours play through to get the platinum?
So I'm
you have
weird,
to play it twice, right?
Yeah, you there's 3 trophies that require New Game Plus. So you have to at least begin a second playthrough. You don't have to play it all the way through. You would have to, I guess the earliest you could get it in a second playthrough would be after the first dungeon, after you've unlocked Mementos. I think you could get the trophies you need there. So yeah, you have to do at least partway into a second playthrough.
So that's like 10 to 15 hours into the game. Well, I guess it's like
close. You could probably burn through it if it's your second time.
And you just get cutscenes. You keep, especially if like for my new game plus, I just put it on safety difficulty because I was just grinding through to get the last things. I think you could get through it pretty quick, but I'm a weird judge of time because my first playthrough was in Japanese. I didn't understand anything that was happening, so it took me a long time, but I was also skipping cutscenes, so I was making up time there. And then my first playthrough in English, I already remembered a lot of the puzzle solutions. So it, my time barometer is a little weird.
Would you say kind of ballpark 80 hours to beat the game?
80 to 100, yeah. Okay. I think it depends on, like, if you're playing in the harder difficulties, you really have to grind. It is a traditional JRPG in that sense as well. So you will have to put 10, 15 hours into just mementos, into really finding time to fight enemies and level up.
Yeah.
So
I was thinking about that this weekend. I cannot understand how you played through it in Japanese, because like there was one of the first things that you get asked to do is like you live inside this cafe, and the guy was like, hey, would you go outside and flip the cafe sign from open to close, please?
That took me like an hour.
I was like, there's no way that he would have known how to do that in Japanese,
and there were no guides yet or anything.
I remember watching play, and there were certain things where it was like, I don't know what's happening.
So it was so funny because like playing in English, something that takes 1 second, they're like, oh, go talk to the teacher in room 302 upstairs. Like, took me an hour of talking to every single person and trying every single door. But
oof. What a maroon.
Beyond listener Marty Sleva asks, how's the banging?
Yeah, what can you tell us about that hot honk ball?
I'll
start over there.
They're definitely the characters that you can become intimate with are all over the place. There's like PG-13, like, you know, nothing. It's not like Mass Effect, you're getting like the soft core like sex stuff.
It's not really banging, it's more like petting.
It's more like heavily suggested, yeah.
Homping.
Homping.
More like homping. It's more like hop ball.
Okay. All right. So yeah. Persona 5. I'm stoked it's finally out.
It's out in a week.
Leave your house
out,
now.
Yeah.
We got to play it because we're privileged boys.
Yes. Sure. Or because we're crazy people who order things from Japan even though we can't read Japanese.
It's so nice having it.
We did a bunch of Let's Plays in Japanese. Whatever happened to those?
Oh yeah, Atlas said no, sir.
Yeah,
walk for it. Yeah. I can't recommend it enough. If you like RPGs, I mean, I know like Mass Effect's out, Zelda, Horizon. There's so much competing for your time. This is a really special game, and if you don't get to it now, I would highly recommend coming back to it because it's just so. It is hard to explain the breadth of it and how just massive and custom built, meticulous, everything.
I mean, it's also so freaking cool. It sounds like a stupid thing to say, but it literally is the coolest game I've ever played.
Yep.
Everyone is so stylish. Like, the anime is so dope. Like, the music is amazing. Like, it's
this
just
wonderful kind of funky groove thing going on.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I'm also like, I'm not wild about some of like the kind of art direction aesthetics. Like, some of the persona are kind of weird. That cat, I don't know, it looks like a beach ball.
I like that one boss that you fight that's just a dong. It's just a giant dong.
Very strange.
Yeah.
But I will say, like, the UI and like the graphic design side of things is just
so slick.
I mean, the thing that comes to mind is Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah.
In terms of something that's just cool.
My favorite thing is like when you perform an all-out attack, you know, if you manage to knock everybody down in a battle, you can perform an all-out attack, and whoever knocked the last player or the last enemy down, it's like considered sort of like their win if you eliminate them in an all-out attack. And then each character gets an individual like title card when the battle is over, and they're all so awesome and so different. Like, Ryuji's is like graffiti street art, and then Anz is like this like bubblegum kind of thing. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
The variety of characters is so cool. Like, I love the party members so much by the time you flesh out the full party. I'm so excited to talk spoilers and have people playing because it's just like, it's such a good,
cool,
special game. I love it.
Yeah. Well, we talked at length about it because it's a big, big PS4 title. So
don't miss it. Yeah. Don't sleep on this game.
Yep.
Speaking of JRPGs, Final Fantasy 15, Chapter 13, Verse 2 is the patch that's fixing pretty much people's biggest complaint with the game.
Chapter 13.
Chapter 13 is like this part where it's, I don't know if you haven't played it, it just kind of jerks the wheel. It feels like it kind of a step backwards to like 13.
So, so I'm going to make a confession here. I played Final Fantasy 15 pretty religiously until everybody started talking about how terrible Chapter 13 was.
Same.
And how it was eventually going to get patched. And so I just pumped the brakes. Like, I haven't.
Exactly.
I put about 8 to 10 hours in, and then I said, okay, I'm going to stop and wait until this patch is here, and then I can just go through the game and not have to worry about this section, which clearly everyone hates.
Do we know if this works mid playthrough? Like,
yeah, I think I assume so.
Yeah, you can update it mid playthrough. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I feel the same way where I pump the brakes and I'm going to wait. Like, I saw the Gladiolus trailer, which, you know, you're fighting Gilgamesh. There was a little teaser for the Prompto one, which looks weird and mature, and he has a gun, and he's going to kill someone in cold blood.
Go up top on those big spire things with the chocobos now.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, I love that they showed like a screenshot a while back where the Regalia has monster truck tires, so you can just drive around off road.
Of course, you love that.
And like, this is going to be one of those games that I'm going to wish that I hadn't touched it in like
you burned through it like over Christmas break, right?
Oh, so good. Yeah, but like, I mean, it's totally not without its faults. But I would say like the sum of the parts is greater than the whole. Like the amount of just weird little just attention details in that game is so great, and the fact that they're just patching in just more weird stuff consistently.
See, that's the thing that I love. I think people were so bummed that it was such a long wait for this game to come out, and now I feel like they're paying it back hard because they're doing all this extra stuff that we didn't know was coming. And
there's a VR mode coming.
And each character gets their own little side story, and they're fixing the things that people didn't like. And like, I think it's
I get
great.
The feeling that like come November there's gonna be a Game of the Year edition that's just gonna be awesome. Like, the definitive way to play this game.
If you're one of those people who's like on the fence about it, but you're still curious, like I'd say hang out for that, and then you've got like an amazing game that'll just like, you know, carry through.
Yeah, and it's like
PS4 Pro support too. So
I think like the fact that they're continuing to support it is a good sign that you should jump on board. Also, like these characters and the fact that they're doing these side stories, like they love these characters. And
so
like
good.
The four people
who the hell
in that party.
Love Prompto?
I mean, seriously, and the four people in that party, like I wouldn't be surprised if I don't know that we'll get like a proper 15-2 or anything necessarily, but I wouldn't be surprised if 15 is a foundation for more of what they do.
I mean, and you know, Square is willing to do that with Lightning.
Yeah.
Lightning was a pillar for them. A lightning pillar.
I can't imagine.
Lightning rod.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Lightning pillar. That old idiom.
I can't imagine them, not, you know, continuing to revisit that.
Yeah.
And
for
sure.
Yeah, that's cool.
So we got a weird
run out of steam there, did you?
Yeah, I did. The lightning pillar thing really knocked me off the boat.
We got a weird thing this week. We've been talking about this for a while, but apparently the next Call of Duty that comes out, spoilers this year, because it's a Call of Duty game, is going to be going back to World War II. And then these posters popped up that just say Call of Duty WW2.
So here's, okay.
What's the story?
Here's the thing. We have some sources that have been talking to us about historical Call of Duty for a while. Mm-hmm. And, you know, during earnings calls, Activision has been pretty clear that, so this year's Sledgehammer.
Yep.
They're the dev. It's kind of their turn.
Yeah.
And they, Activision has been talking about it, taking the series back to its roots. And they've been kind of not really hiding the fact that it's clearly not going to be, you know, Advanced Warfare 2 or something.
Yeah.
You know, like they're changing it up. We had heard historical setting. We had kind of a dubious source, which is why we never ran this, that World War II was one of many historical settings. I don't know if that means for this game or sort of the next few Call of Duty games or revisiting older historical settings. But this jives with what we've heard, that World War II is kind of coming back in a big way.
Yeah.
And I think Battlefield 1 proved that you don't need to have modern settings.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing is I could totally still see the multiple settings thing working out in this game, because the way that stuff looks is it's Call of Duty : World War II. I could see the exact same promotional material of Call of Duty : Vietnam.
Exactly.
Like I could totally see this entire promotional run being Call of Duty : Korean War.
Yeah.
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 So we'll see. I'm very excited for this either way. I think Sledgehammer is a really good team.
Yeah.
And I feel like Advanced Warfare had really cool parts. I actually like that campaign a lot. Probably more than I like Infinite Warfare's in some ways. But I don't think that it felt like they were like in a box sort of. It didn't like really bring anything brand new to the table.
And we always talk about that pendulum. Like there's future fatigue right now.
Yeah.
Well, Call of Duty's done, between Titanfall. Like it's just like, all right, I've had enough of these beeps and boops. Like you sort of want to go back. It's been an entire generation since they've gone back and done
it. And it's also so different now. Like the World War II era days of Call of Duty was Infinity Ward, and then, you know, Treyarch came on board, World of War. But the Call of Duty machine has changed so much since then. And Treyarch is a very different developer in a post-Black Ops world than they were. Mm-hmm. And Infinity Ward is a very different team, because now so many people went to Respawn.
Not to, like, outside of the skill, like the systems that they were developing those games for, like the technology has come so far that they can create entirely different
world. Yeah, you saw how gorgeous Battlefield 1 was. Yeah. Exactly.
No, I mean, it'd be really cool to see, like, also those games are always just incredibly polished, and it'll be neat to be like, oh, you haven't made a World War II game in a minute.
And it's been a while. Sledgehammer hasn't at all.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, it's a really cool, like, I'm really excited to see what they can, what the modern era will inform for like a really grounded World War II story.
And again, like, I saw a lot of comments being like, oh, you're just doing this because Battlefield 1 was a success. This game is a 3-year dev cycle.
Yeah.
I promise you these were developed in vacuums.
I think it was on this show when we were talking about
just trying
that,
to,
right?
Yeah. You're like, no, this was not responsive.
Well, and we had a, I found an old interview from E3 2015 where we talked to Eric Hirschberg about if they would want to revisit a historical setting. And at the time he was like, very coy. And like looking back, it's like, oh, they totally already knew.
Yeah, it was already, the wheels were moving.
Yeah. I mean, it's steering a gigantic ship. Very difficult.
And
but,
I think it's also super exciting when we look at the, what the next story is, what the two Activision pillars of this fall are going to be between this and what Destiny 2 is shaping up to be.
Yeah. So we got the big reveal of Destiny 2's fancy logo. Yeah. It has a 2 in it.
Yeah.
It's a big, big number 2. Yeah. And then we got a Last Call teaser.
Yeah, we got a teaser just like a couple hours ago, which is like a minute 15 seconds of Nathan Fillion's character at a bar telling a story.
So
as like the world's collapsing around it, basically.
And I think I played a really a pretty significant amount of Destiny in the initial year to 18 months, right?
Was it Vanilla Destiny or was it like
Vanilla Destiny and the first expansion up through like the Taken King. So I guess that was like Rise of Iron and Taken King.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if I got that wrong. But Cade 6 is one of the best parts of Destiny. Mm-hmm. And I think like leading the announcement of Destiny 2 with Nathan Fillion as Cade 6 in this sort of like fun teaser trailer is such a dynamic shift in tone from the original Destiny that like for a game that I haven't really cared about in 6 to 8 months, I was really stoked to watch this. Like it immediately caught my attention and brought me back on board. Like I'm really interested to see.
And like the initial Destiny, you know, reveal and then hype machine up to launch was sort of a wet blanket of a sci-fi story. They leaned hard into the Peter Dinklage character, which obviously ended up getting patched out just because I was like, what is this? And I feel like the game has changed so much over the last, you know, whatever year and a half it's been out, 2 years. And
he like cranked that Soldier Boy.
Yeah, like cranked that Soldier Boy.
I mean, by the time this game comes out, it'll have almost been 3 years, right?
Yeah. And so,
it was developed for last gen too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy to think about. And that
wow.
Was,
yeah. Is the PS3 version of Destiny still?
No. The last expansion, I think was the first expansion that they said it was not compatible with the last generation.
Cut that.
Yeah. Also, that first expansion was Vault of Glass.
It's crazy because I played Vanilla Destiny for 10 hours and then stopped. And I really, like, I missed out on so much of when the game became really good.
Yeah.
That, like, I mean, it became an entirely different game, especially with Taken King.
It like, seems like it. Yeah. And like, it's just like, it's the problem we always have where there are so many games and this one is one you really have to find the time to pour into. Destiny 2, I hope, is it. Like, I would love to jump in at that point and I hope it's accessible. They have talked a little bit about characters transferring over, kind of like the things that will carry over. I hope you can still jump in and not feel like you're lagging.
They talked about the things are pretty much purely aesthetic.
Yeah.
Like it's not going to be like someone like Destin or Fran who's put 500 hours into the game is going to have an advantage over you, other than the fact that they're going to have an advantage over you because
they're better at insane. Shooting Destiny.
The stuff that I'm excited about is that they've had a chance to really just flesh this out. They're not kind of like launching this you know, massive effort on multiple platforms that are still kind of untested. This is two. It's always good when a game has a sequel that is, I mean, trying to prove itself. It's an iterative medium. Yeah.
Uncharted, Assassin's Creed. Uh-huh.
I was going to say, especially a sequel, especially a sequel in the hands of Bungie. Yeah, look at Halo 2 versus the original Halo. Yeah. So like, take the feedback that you got on the original Destiny and the learnings that you've made in all those expansions, apply that to a sequel, and it, I mean, ostensibly could be a hell of a game. Out of the gate.
The other little tidbits that came out from this teaser are that the full reveal is coming on Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific time. We're going to have a pre and post show, so tune in around 9:45. Ooh, yeah. We'll have much smarter
people,
Destiny kids.
Yeah, I was going to say,
us.
That's when people that actually know what they're talking about when it comes to Destiny will talk about it.
Like, I feel bummed out because like, I was excited about Destiny going in, and I jumped on it, you know, at launch with the whole like open alpha and beta and all that stuff. And then I was just like, oh, is that all that there is here? And then I got distracted by other games. And then it developed this huge like fan base and this wonderful community. And I've got tons of friends who play it like religiously. And I just feel kind of like, oh man, like I was like, I felt the same way with Halo. Like I kind of missed out on that early on. And I was like, by the time it took off, I was like, I don't know where to, you know, and then maybe Destiny 2 will be a better jumping on point. Yeah. But
They've also announced that, you know, this is probably the first confirmed game for the Sony show at E3, because they've announced that once again the DLC is coming first to PS4 up and through fall of 2018. So I bet quite a bit of money that this is on stage at E3.
I put a relevant George W. Bush quote here, which is, "Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, you can't get fooled again." So Destiny 2, looking forward to it. I, for one, am pumped. Anyway, no, I don't know. I have no idea.
Just took a hard left there.
Yeah. No, he's a right. He was a president. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean that's. I'm just curious to see what it is. Anything.
Yep. No, for sure.
Yeah. We got our first look at the photos of Alicia Vikander in the Tomb Raider movie.
The first official. Yep.
The first official ones. Yeah. Not on like a weird zip line that just looks like somebody cosplaying it at a game.
She looks. She looks crazy. Awesome. She looks exactly like she does in the game.
It's like exactly like even like the like. Bandages on her leg, and like the little pickaxe like thing. She's carrying. Yeah.
Which is it's like a dead ringer for the reboot. Yeah, yeah, it's pretty impressive.
It's kind of nuts though, because I feel like in terms of like video game movies, it's always there's always like some little bit of a reinterpretation.
Sure.
You know, but
So GQ did an interview with the director that actually personally, and I don't know how much of the minority I'm in for this, but like I really like the Tomb Raider reboot, but I hated the supernatural stuff towards the end. I just hate the ending so much, and it ruined the game for me. And so I liked Rise of the Tomb Raider a lot better because it was so much more grounded. In an interview with the director that GQ did yesterday, he talked about how they're kind of taking some elements from Rise as well. So my total speculation, what I would at least like to see, would be take the first 75% of the reboot, get up to that point right before the supernatural cutoff happens, and then just use the end of that game to segue into a sequel and do cool. Rise.
Yeah. I think it'd be awesome if there's a stinger after the credits where there's all this bonus stuff unlocked, and it just it's the first scene of the movie, but Lara runs by with a giant head, and she's got like a rainbow trail, and she's like throwing chickens at people,
just, like,
and they're exploding.
All the scenes of her being like impaled in the depths. Yeah.
Benny Hill theme.
32-bit Alicia Vikander.
Yeah, and the cast is like, it's like Walton Goggins, McNulty from The Wire. Like,
so what was that first name?
Walton Goggins.
From Justified and Shield.
He's an amazing actor.
Stuff. He's really, really good. Yeah.
I'm sure I'd know.
He's a Sergio Rivera.
He's one of the titular vice principals in HBO's Vice Principals.
Yeah, he is. Right?
There's a bunch of games coming out this week.
Sergio.
One of them, what is it? There's the new MLB one where you can
The Show.
You can have your photograph taken by the camera, and then they make you get the scary hair face on the television.
What could go wrong?
Then of course there is
terrifying nightmare honkball boys.
Yeah. There's also old time hockey, I think, which I've had my eye on for a while. It looks like NHL like 94, like an old just like
an old time hockey game.
Yeah, but it's kind of got this like grungy sounded 70s aesthetic, and there's an emphasis on beating the crap out of people. So it's sort of like the Warriors in that sense. Big fan of that concept.
Yeah.
Then there's Rain World, which I think we touched on like probably repeatedly.
Slugcat's a very hard video game. Scrubbles, Joe Scrubbles from a UK team reviewed it. Scrubbles, six something. Scrubbles the cat.
Yeah, the reviews are kind of like in that like 6 to 8 range. I think they're kind of things people seem to like versus not like back and forth.
Yeah.
I want to play it. I love the way that game looks.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, I've seen it being described as like a Metroidvania. Yeah.
Is that, starting with Slugcat.
Yeah.
Like it. Yeah. This was, a big week too. The last Dark Souls DLC came out. Chloe gave an 8.
Yeah, and you spoiled it last episode.
But everyone says I spoiled it. I played the first 15 minutes and talked about the first 15 minutes, which were what everyone has seen so far. So I feel I don't think I was capable of spoiling it.
You ruined it.
And then also Snake Pass is out. Snake Pass is a very good video game that you guys should play.
Why don't you spoil that
Sumo
too?
Digital. It is about a snake who must compete in obstacle courses.
Great.
Snake Passes.
Cool. Yeah.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, I actually played I played Snake Pass with you at the Switch event.
Yeah.
Marty and I played Snake Pass many times together.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a super cool physics-based.
I already made that joke yesterday.
We're talking about doing sex.
Oh, honkball.
Yeah, just playing the old honkball.
Yeah, but it's really good. It's the most lifelike snake movement in any video game ever.
Pass as we're trying to tell people how great their game is, but we mostly talk about me and Marty doing smooches on each other.
Yeah, we call them snake patches, or we can call them sumo digitals.
Amen.
But no, I want to touch on this. We talked about how like seeing a Call of Duty game that does World War II again after all these years is like, that could be interesting. I think that with the way games and technology work, an idea that seems entirely played out can get revisited. Like, remember the bow and arrow in Turok Dinosaur Hunter, which sucked? It's whatever. And then there was that year in like 2012 when everybody just figured out how to make bow and arrow mechanics work.
Yeah, now we have Horizon.
Like, Snake Pass is, you think about like, what's the last good game you played that featured an actual snake, not like a you know,
Metal Gear Solid 5, the Phantom Pain.
Yeah. Okay. But I mean,
several
like,
snakes
there's
there.
Like the snake game on your phone, or there's that, like, what is it? Like the Snakeios, the Wormios game, that game that kids play in the browsers or whatever.
Wormios?
I don't know what it's called. It's called
the
like,
browsers.
So I don't know. Pairs kids play it. It's like a wormy game. It's you spin around. Anyway.
What's wrong with Nobi Nobi Boy?
It's okay. So there's another example, but like, you know, any game that where it's like mechanically kind of simple and then somebody comes along and completely just flips the table over. Like, it's an incredibly realistic snake mechanic.
Right. Even just platformers in general, I think, are, you know, starting with Ratchet last year and now into Yooka-Laylee coming soon all this stuff. Like, there's a resurgence of that genre as a whole, even aside from mechanics. And
that aesthetic as well. Well, right? Snake Pass has this, like, gorgeous sort of Banjo-Kazooie looking aesthetic. Yeah.
Jokes aside, like, this game. I never really thought about what it'd be like to control a snake in a video game until I played this, and I'm like, oh, this is different than anything I've ever played before.
Thank you.
But it totally hits, and it relies so heavily on movement in the same way that something like Bound or something like Piano 3, that like the game, or Abzu, where like the game is about the movement and the movement is the game.
Well, it sounds so stupid.
At a glance, this looks like Banjo-Kazooie or Yooka-Laylee or whatever, but it's like, this is under the hood, this is something entirely new that no one's ever done before.
Well, it's such a physics-based thing, right? And it sounds so stupid, but like I was having a really hard time playing when I first picked up the sticks and was like, you know, trying to move this snake around, and the guy giving me the demo was like, you got to think like a snake. And at first I was like kind of thinking like, well, that's pretty flippant, obviously, but then as soon as I was like, oh right, it's a snake, it moves like a snake, that's how I got to control it, and it clicked. It's so much fun. And like Brian was texting us yesterday and was talking about how he's been playing it and saying that he's trying to 100% every level, and it's actually super challenging to find those last few hidden secrets and stuff like that. And I think that's awesome. Like, we don't have a ton of games like that anymore.
Man, this first couple months has been really good for video games.
What a Jesus. Year. And there's still like a bunch of crap that's probably coming out this fall that they haven't even told us about yet.
Yeah.
Call of Duty Dub Dub 2.
Yeah, Dub Dub 2.
World War II could call Dub Dub 2.
Oh boy. I feel like that's very disrespectful.
I know about some parades that might be very upset with you. Veterans parades.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Or just people with common sense parades.
I shortened W yourself, to
Marty.
Dub Dub.
Yeah, don't do that.
Nope.
Don't do that.
Terrible.
Knock it off.
You know what? I think it's
bad.
Why don't you go spoil sport DLC?
Get bad and
anyway,
feel bad.
This is Podcast Beyond. I don't think we're supposed to call it a podcast anymore because we have this beautiful studio we do the video version in. Have you been watching it? Because we're on youtube.com/IGNBeyond. You should be subscribed to us over there. And again, check out our Facebook group. It's facebook.com/groups/podcastbeyond. There's that name again. You can find us all on Twitter. I'm Max Scald.
Max Scald.
Max Scalding.
That was me being at the end of able to speak words.
Yeah.
I like how you nailed everything business-wise and then fumbled over yourself. Where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter, Max Scoville. Andrew is Garfep. Zach is Zacharias D.
That's right.
Marty is McBiggity with two G's and two T's, otherwise spelled like a really, really awful McDonald's food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
I think it's a delicious McDonald's.
That's the show. Beyond.
Beyond. Beyond.
Yes.
The end.
That was the end?
Yep.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over 1 million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.